Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Are you tired of the pandemic? I know I am, but it is still very much here. The information and the numbers and the executive orders continue to change. And sometimes for some of us, it is just too much. It also divides us politically and even in our families, in our homes. And it's also a bit much for our children. Well, tonight, we're talking about all of these issues at our COVID-19 roundtable, specifically as we talk about dealing with pandemic fatigue. We begin tonight with Dr. Gishon Mance, licensed clinical psychologist at the Howard University Department of Psychology, and Shante Daniel, principal at the Excel Academy in the DC Public School System. Lines are open. If you have a comment or question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Mance, Ms. Daniel, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Mance, I want to start with you. This pandemic fatigue issue is not a new issue, but where are we now from your perspective 2 years into the pandemic?
Oh, great question. 2 years in, I believe that a lot of people are at that point where they've hit mental fatigue. They're having a sense of kind of being what we call demotivated and exhausted, and particularly exhausted about the inconsistency or unpredictability of their day-to-day. But one of the things that we know about just being a human being is that we tend to thrive when there's a sense of consistency, routine, predictability. And just kind of think about the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, is that it really has just kind of thrown all of that for a loop. Mm-hmm. And so we're constantly having to make decisions that we typically didn't have to think about, right? You just get in your car, go where you need to go, or go for a walk. And you didn't have to think about putting on a mask, hand sanitizer, keeping social distancing. So just that added, I wouldn't say responsibility, but it's kind of like those added cognitive demands. They have really become taxing, and people are at a point where they are exhausted. So they may still be able to go because we kind of hit that go button, and we've kind of conditioned ourselves to still show up, to still produce, to still have to meet our demands. But there's this sense of fatigue and exhaustion that you may have not typically had before. And a lot of that has to do with kind of hitting your cognitive threshold, if you will, and your physical threshold.
Ms. Daniel, you are in a unique position as principal of Excel Academy because it is an all-girls school. And so you have an opportunity to see how these young ladies are reacting under the stress of the pandemic. What, as a professional educator, have you observed?
That is absolutely true. We are an all-girls school, the only all-girls school in D.C. I think there is no denying what was just said of that added pressure with all of the new guidelines and asking, you know, three-year-olds all the way up into my eighth graders to adhere to all of these guidelines and these new rules is very new to them. So I think the behaviors that we see is a cry for reinforcement often, right? They need help. They're still kids at heart. And then I think we're also seeing the pressures of what's going on in their homes coming into school more now than ever before. So it's requiring us to step up. It's requiring us to do that much more to really respond to their needs.
Mm-hmm. How do you believe that the girls are addressing or dealing with this differently than boys?
I don't know if we have data that that disseminates boys versus girls. I can only speak to what I'm responding to every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have that informal data in front of me every day of how boys are responding. But, you know, one thing about kids in general is they're super resilient, probably more resilient than we are. And they continue to bring that joy factor even when sometimes as adults we're exhausted. So I think we as adults lean on them for that unintentionally while we're still trying to keep on our happy face and balance all of the demands that adults have to do in this season right now. So I'm not sure that there's a distinction between the genders, but I can say that what I respond to every day is different.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Mance, you and Ms. Daniel are both participating in an event tomorrow, Managing COVID-19 Pandemic Fatigue. Talk to me not only about what you hope will come out of it, as well as some of the details about how people can find out more about it.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that we are hoping that would come out of our panel discussion is essentially kind of like a mind shift, if you will. So a lot of times people may have been thinking, once this is over, and this idea that we're going to return back to whatever it was pre-COVID, but really beginning to kind of challenge this notion of we're going to return back to the sense of normal, but really adopting the sense of a new normal and kind of having a shift of how one at one point in time would see oneself as protected, if you will, just protected in the sense of from where we live, whether it's from the country that we live in, our medical system, but really kind of seeing the vulnerability that exists within different structures and systems within our society, within our country. And so having a mental shift of kind of understanding that there may be a mental shift of kind of accepting a new norm. And then also kind of looking at more of the cognitive neuroscience behind this pandemic fatigue, why you may be experiencing extra exhaustion or demotivation. And then lastly, some self-care. So really kind of focusing on mental health and kind of putting it at the forefront and recognizing when it may be time to seek professional help and just kind of giving various resources. I know there's information about this panel on the graduate school website at Howard University. So if you go into Howard University Graduate School, there is information there as well to find out more information.
I will make sure that we, as always, post that information on our website on whur.com. That information will be on our website after 8:30, as always. I know we are about to lose you, Ms. Daniel, but before we do, any final thoughts about from your unique vantage point, particularly as it relates to young people and their thoughts about being vaccinated? Even though you deal with minors, they still have opinions.
That is absolutely true. They certainly do have opinions, but the reality is not being vaccinated hinders them in many ways. For example, middle school playing athletic sports after school. And so I think now not only are they sharing their opinions with us as school leaders and teachers in the building, but they also share their opinions with their families. And so, you know, we try to find every win possible when we think about the impact that this is having. And one win is their level of advocacy for themselves, their level of advocacy for their families, and then their choices of why. Right. What I just described is only one avenue of why they may want to get vaccinated, but they describe other reasons too. And their fear of the virus itself. So, you know, one thing I can appreciate and I value about our girls is that they are becoming more outspoken and they are finding their own lane and what they want and their reasons why, and they're staying grounded in that, and I can appreciate that.
Ashante, Daniel, thank you so much for spending some time with us and sharing your unique perspective. And we hope that you remain safe and also keep the girls in school safe as well. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
Sure thing. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the COVID-19 roundtable. The issue tonight is COVID fatigue. pandemic fatigue. This is not a new issue, but we are now at the two-year mark for the COVID-19 pandemic. That first case seen exactly 2 years ago this month. If you have any comments, if you have any questions, give us a call. We are, as always, answering your questions. Joining us now on the line is Dr. Reed Tuckson, co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID-19. And of course, Dr. Gishon Mance continues with us. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Tuckson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, my brother.
Let us talk, if I may, Dr. Tuckson, about some of the latest information coming out today about the Omicron variant. There seems to be the news that it is peaking across the country, that, and in some cases, we are seeing a decline. Talk to us a little bit about that.
This is very important and very encouraging information that we are, after having such a horrific and very dramatic upscale of this over the last couple of months, it is now starting to go down. And that is exciting. What is concerning is that somehow, though, we have to remember that we're still losing about 1,000 people a day. That's a lot of lives to lose. Let's say it goes down to 800 a day. That's still 800 people dying every day. And so it's important that we do not use the fact that this is starting to decrease to relax our vigil. There are very misguided efforts like we're seeing in Virginia with the governor sort of saying, okay, kids, everybody go back to school without masks now. It's all over. Well, it's not over. And a lot of people are going to suffer as a result of that ill-advised decision. And so I guess, Harold, in a nutshell, is good news that we may be seeing now finally that we will have some light at the end of the tunnel. But if we do not get people to continue to get boosted as the last of the three stages of your vaccinations, if we still do not have people wearing their masks, and unfortunately now we know that we need to wear the N95 masks, that the cloth masks are not as effective nearly at all on Omicron, if we have people stop wearing their masks and relax their vigil, then inevitably a lot more people are going to get sick, particularly those who are vulnerable. So good news. No question about it. Bad news is some people will use this as a reason to relax their vigil, and that means that more people will die.
Dr. Mance, I want to go back a little bit and drill down into the psychology of pandemic fatigue, and at least briefly, and we can talk about it a little bit more after the break, how might it present when we... How might we see a difference in how people interact, how those fuses are getting a tad bit shorter? I've got about 30 seconds, but I want you to at least kind of touch on that, and we can talk about that more on the other side.
Absolutely. We may see more what we call cognitive dulling. And so that is a difficulty concentrating, a decreased productivity, a decline in one's emotional health, more irritability. So you can see a combination of those things and essentially a craving for social interactions, particularly due to as much isolation as we've been in. But those are just some of the ways in which it may manifest.
I see. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the COVID-19 Roundtable, a weekly feature as we continue to examine the long-term impact of the pandemic. If you have a comment, if you have a question, we invite you to join the conversation. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. Please don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone. You can hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the COVID-19 roundtable. We are talking about all things COVID-19. My guests tonight are Dr. Gishon Mads, licensed clinical psychologist at the Howard University Department of Psychology, and Dr. Reed Tuckson, co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID-19. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have a comment or question, certainly for me, I invite you to tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Back to you, Dr. Mads. And I know you spoke clinically, but from a layman's point of view, how might someone notice how a family member may be impacted by pandemic fatigue, a husband, a wife, partner, a parent, for example? What might someone look for?
That's a great question. It can look a lot of different ways. It can manifest in irritability. So things that you typically would enjoy doing or things that would typically not take a second thought, you're more irritable or kind of presenting like very short with people. So that could look like having arguments around things that you typically didn't have arguments around. Difficulty concentrating, things that you used to be able to do, or you see a family member be able to kind of do things, maybe is juggling things to get different tasks done, or whether it was just being able to finish one specific task, now they're having a hard time kind of continuing to complete a task from start to end. And so they may feel as if they are scattered, and they may feel like they're kind of like all over the place. And then you may notice that some people may kind of turn inward and have more sadness, or they don't appear to have as much emotional range as they used to be. So as opposed to kind of being happy and sad and excited and just having these range of emotions, we kind of see them kind of like hanging out. If we had to put it on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being kind of a sad event or the saddest you have ever been, and 10 being excited and the most excited he's ever been, they kind of hang out at like around a 2 or 3. And if we're thinking about 5 being average, they're kind of below average. They're kind of hanging out there. And it's really hard for them to kind of get up to like a 5 or a 6 or a 7 even. So those are the types of things that we want to kind of keep an eye out for. So not necessarily having a range of emotion and difficulty sleeping, difficulty eating, irritability, easily angered. So these are some of the things that some of this fatigue, exhaustion, we may see that it may show up in family members.
Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Keith, calling from Baltimore. Keith, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. There's several things. One is, usually when it in regards to this COVID epidemic, I think, it was kind of not adequate. I'm trying to find the word for it. It was not adequately publicized in terms of who the heroes are. That's number one. When the pandemic hit, all of a sudden we're talking about the healthcare workers, the nurses, the doctors being the heroes. Well, to me, that really did a disservice to the thousands of other people that are working out there in other occupations that are on the front line serving the public and come in just as much contact with the public as the healthcare providers. We, look at the undertakers. They got to deal with these dead bodies. Look at people that work in human services and how they have to come in contact with the public. For example, I myself, and I'm not going to necessarily mention my occupation, but I have to do home visits. So I'm in and out of, I have to go in and out of people's homes. And, I have to wear a mask and these kinds of things. But look at the occupational hazards that I am exposed to as a provider to the public. In addition to that, it's not just the adults, because now you also see children that are coming down with COVID. And I was informed not too long ago, oh, you need to quarantine because this child tested positive for COVID. That presents a lot of stress. You know, you deal with this issue of fatigue, because not only that, but you also have to go home to your family.
Okay. You said there was another point you wanted to make?
Yeah. My point also is, don't let me forget it, but my point also is, you know, how do we look at protecting the psychological aspect of this in regards to the mental health care? Because all of a sudden there was this abrupt shift into virtual mental health. Now, there are a lot of people that are saying to me, I don't want to see no therapist online. Now, they're trying to say, well, this is the new normal. Well, I think what also is probably going to happen here is that we're going to lose a lot of people that were being seen under normal conditions before this pandemic. Because where's the confidentiality and how is all of that assured when you're dealing with people virtually in terms of psychotherapy, mental health, or whatever you want to call it? You know, this pandemic has brought about a whole unexpected cultural shift in the way things are done. And to just expect people to just change all of a sudden, change up what was normal to now what you're trying to make the normal, is presenting a major crisis.
I'll let Dr. Manns address your second point, and then I'll have Dr. Tuckson kind of chime in. Dr. Manns?
Thank you.
I think our caller, you make some interesting points. Interestingly enough, one of the things, I'm in private practice. I'm a child psychologist by training, but I do see a number of adults and I see families. And interestingly enough, one of the things that I experienced during the pandemic is really a uptake in intakes, essentially. So I have a wait list, and a lot of my colleagues who are in private practice, there's a wait list. So I think you're correct in regards to this, the shift that having this experience has essentially warranted more people seeking services and acknowledging that mental health is an area that needs to be addressed, whereas where we used to, particularly in the Black community or communities of color, we would typically hear a discussion about stigma as it relates to mental health. Well, what I am seeing is more of a willingness to engage in services. And many clinicians now are back in face-to-face, and a lot are still using online systems. And some are using a hybrid model. I work with children, so I do more of a hybrid model because face-to-face works a little bit better for the younger ones. And for some of them, they're so used to technology. Some of them prefer it. So I think you have some legitimate concerns, but also the field has done a good job of addressing the concerns and the need for individuals when it comes to mental health during this pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Tuckson, Keith was talking about some of the so-called, you know, unsung heroes. I would, before he started listing, you know, human service workers, I was thinking that he might have talked about, you know, the bus drivers, the subway drivers, grocery store workers, people in the post office, and we can go on and on and on and on. Your thoughts about that?
Thank you. Very quickly, by the way, I would also just augment my colleague's thing on the mental health side and just say that even prior to the pandemic, the largest increase in the use of the new tools called telehealth, which is providing health care remotely, was mental health. And so inevitably, with or without the pandemic, to our caller, you are going to see a lot more mental health being delivered through remote mechanisms. That is not only related to the pandemic, but just the nature of the changing of the field. So, and you can expect that will be even more enhanced after we come out of the pandemic. So I guess I would say you have to kind of get used to that idea. In terms of the workers, The first group, we at the Black Coalition Against COVID, the very first people that we reached out to were the Metro bus drivers, subway operators, and so forth. And some may recall the posters that we put all around the city using Antoine Big G Glover from Backyard Band and that crew, talking about how important it was to wear masks. And it was designed specifically to try to protect the people that were operating the buses. Number two, we have been very involved at the Black Coalition Against COVID with the Washington Teachers Union. And we certainly think that those are heroes and sheroes. And then finally, I think the point is well made when we think about the sanitation workers. We have been very actively involved, including tonight, working with the sanitation workers. And so let me very quickly throw in that they are being neglected terribly, and they should be given multiple sets of N95 masks, and the city has yet to do that. It is a darn shame that we are so reluctant to give the sanitation workers the N95 masks to protect them and also to protect us as they go about the community. They are very much at risk. So I will take the caller's point specifically. Lastly, you will hear in the next couple of weeks a major contest that we at the Black Coalition Against COVID will be having to celebrate the unsung heroes. So my brother who has made this question has made a very important point. We totally agree. We have been doing what he asked us to do, and we need more people to do what the Black Coalition Against COVID has been doing. Good point.
Okay, Keith, thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the COVID roundtable talking about the current the current issues of the day as it relates to the pandemic. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. One of the other issues that I think we need to address, and certainly I'd like to have both of you chime in, but I'll start with Dr. Tuckson. Anecdotally, and I'm sure there is data out there, there seems to be a bit of a divide between young people, young adults who are vaccinated and boosted, and older adults who are. And talk to me if you have any data or any thoughts on this, Dr. Tuckson. It seems that, I've spoken to some friends, some colleagues, some associates who are vaccinated and boosted, but their children are not. Their children are in their 20s. Their children are perhaps in their 30s. And they say they aren't going to do it. They don't trust it, what have you. But these are the same children who may have children who have been on the MMR schedule, measles, mumps, rubella. Talk to me about that. And I'm not known for doing this, but I'm being politically correct in saying that is just a tad bit strange to me. It doesn't make sense. But.
Well, it is. There's no question, Harold, as the thesis of your point, I believe, is that the hardest to reach to get vaccinated are our young people. We know the easiest to get vaccinated are our seniors. And they have definitely shown that because they are at such enormous risk for death. The younger children are also the ones who are online and who are eating up and gobbling up all the misinformation from those who do not mean our people well. And so they are harder to reach. The other reason why they are challenging is that they're getting this information from these very narrow social media outlets, which makes it hard to give them the right information. So to quickly just make the point here, if you are a young person and you have any idea that you want to maintain your fertility or you ultimately want to get pregnant or you are a person who is pregnant and wants to start to think about having a successful outcome, all of those populations do poorly if they are unvaccinated and get COVID. And if they are vaccinated, there is no danger. There is zero, and let me be as clear as possible, zero evidence anywhere that the COVID vaccines are going to affect negatively your fertility. It does not do that. And it is abundantly evident that people who are unvaccinated and who do get COVID have very significant outcomes, bad outcomes for pregnancy, and it also can affect fertility, including for men. So I think we just have to keep pushing forward on giving people information. But, Harold, it is very difficult. And the last point very quickly is your bigger point here outside of COVID needs to be understood. We now have the data that overall vaccinations outside of COVID, traditional vaccines, vaccinations are now down, which means inevitably that there will be many more black folks, particularly our children, who will get sick because of all of the misinformation around COVID and the distrust. And this worries me greatly. We have got to get people to be following science and using their intelligence. The people that are going to suffer the most are going to be our vulnerable children.
When you address this with the clients that you meet with, Dr. Mance, do they express any concerns about the vaccine?
That's a great question. I feel as if my clients, I would say, is probably a 50-50 split, actually. For those who, they're vaccinated and boosted, they follow the science. They kind of watch the news as it relates to what's being provided to them. They're going to the World Health Organization website or the CDC, and they're kind of using that type of data information to inform themselves. For those who are a little bit more, for lack of a better word, skeptical, a lot of it has to do with the lack of trust. And we all know the history, right? There's a lack of trust in the medical system when it comes to the black community, whether it's rooted in the Tuskegee experiment, whether it's rooted in a sense of healthy paranoia, if you will, for just being a black person in America. But there is rooted in fear. At the end of the day, is rooted in fear. And I think one of the things that would be helpful if we're having a discussion is to really kind of meet people where they are in regards to giving them the information, but also recognizing that the underlying aspect of this apprehension may be a sense of fear or the reality of, like, why should I trust this larger system that hasn't necessarily had my best interest at heart? And you have to address that. Right? So we have all the information, and the information is out there. It's an abundant information in regards to how safe the vaccinations are and how that for those who do get vaccinated, how they fare. But there's also information for others in regards to why that their case, again, essentially why they're not being vaccinated. And a lot of, again, has to be rooted with a sense of not trusting the systems that are distributing the vaccines.
Your thoughts, yes, about the anti-vax protein yesterday, Dr. Tuckson, and I'm not talking about the freedom of speech part of it.
When a person like Robert Kennedy Jr. walks into a city like D.C. spewing his nonsense, which has been honed over many, many, many years, it just makes my skin crawl because there are people who are listening to his foolishness. And as a result, people get sick and they die. I have to keep saying to people that the Black Coalition Against COVID is comprised in part by the four black medical schools and the National Medical Association, the National Black Nurses Association. We all went to school. We all came out of the black community. We are all black. We've all been through being arrested unnecessarily by the police. We've all been hassled. We've gone through all of the same issues that every other black person has, except we have devoted our lives to studying meticulously and participating in conducting the research and analyzing the research. We are completely 100% united about the importance of being vaccinated, the safety and the effectiveness of these vaccines, and unlike this maniac Robert Kennedy, the childhood vaccines to prevent measles, mumps, and rubella. I was the senior physician for the March of Dimes Birth Defects Foundation for a number of years. I know this data thoroughly, and I can tell you that measles, mumps, and rubella and the other childhood vaccines are safe and they are effective, and we have stamped out diseases in this country that have plagued the nation for generations, and now we have a way to control them. And here comes this white man into our world and starts to spew this nonsense, and somehow or another we listen to him and think that he knows more than the combined firepower of all four of our historically black medical schools and our NMA, National Medical Association, and all of the black doctors. This is just amazing how we can turn away from our own people who have made this their life's work to know and understand and speak compassionately and with love to our community. And yet some maniac on the internet can make one statement, and all of a sudden that person is more important than all of these other people from your own race who your grandparents and parents before that sacrificed to enable them to be able to go to these schools, to learn their craft, and then serve their people. It is an amazing phenomenon, Harold, when we would find that people on the internet, kooky on the internet, could be listened to more than people who have devoted their lives to the service and salvation of black people through science. Mm-hmm.
The other issue that I did want to discuss, actually two issues, because there seems to be this, among the anti-vaxxers, this growing issue about natural immunity. Can you talk to me about that and explain what they're talking about? And because I know that indeed there have been people who have been exposed and not infected. There have been people who have been exposed, infected, and asymptomatic, never get sick, who are not vaccinated at all. And then, you know, there are those who have been exposed, infected, get sick, and recover, and refuse to get vaccinated even afterwards. And all of these things hover around the issue of natural immunity. Can you talk to me about that?
The first most important point to recognize, I think, after having a couple of years of speaking with your very intelligent, wonderful guests and listeners, is that we are totally in support of living a healthy life so that you build up your natural immunity. This is a very important thing, getting enough sleep, exercising properly, eating a proper diet, doing the things that will keep your body functioning maximally so that it can overcome biological threats and challenges. So this is a key thing. But what it does not do is to overcome something like the Omicron or the Delta COVID virus, that we need that plus. It's a belt and suspenders. And so that we know, for example, that with the Omicron variant, we have done the research, we have seen the data, it is unequivocal that your natural immunity does not protect you from Omicron. We know that even being infected by Omicron does not give you enough antibody response in general to be able to overcome. We already know that even two doses of the vaccine, while it does, you get much better protection from death and serious illness than if you had just gotten the antibodies from natural infection. But we know we need to get the booster to get the maximum impact to bring this thing to closure. So to sum it up, let us be clear. No one is suggesting that we should not try to enhance our immune systems. That would be stupid. We need to do that. But also we need to augment our natural ability with the booster so that we will give ourselves the best chance. And if anybody wants to continue to do the anecdotes of the one-off and a one-off here and my cousin Benny over here, just look at what happened in our hospitals. Almost 90% of the people hospitalized with COVID were unvaccinated. So it was a clear distinction all across America and all across the world, not just America, that the pandemic hospitalization was a hospitalization pandemic of the unvaccinated, not of the vaccinated. And that's really all the proof that you really need at scale.
Back to the issue of a peaking and a drop in Omicron cases, for example, And even, you know, for the great Dr. Reed Tuckson, this may be a question you can't answer. If that is happening, why is that happening? Is this, in my simplified non-medical degree mind, is this going away? Is this as a result of vaccinations? What is happening? Why are we seeing a reduction in cases, or are we seeing a reduction in infections? Because that's not six of one, half dozen of the other, is it? I don't even know how to ask the question.
No, you're asking it very well. And by the way, the one thing about COVID will do is anybody who thinks they know it all or they're the great doctor, this disease will humble you in a millisecond. Because we have so much that changes because the virus changes. But the answer to your question is, and your question answered itself, it's a combination of several things. Number one, it's like if you think about a bonfire, and you have a bonfire, you need wood. The more wood around, the bonfire grows. If you take the wood away, the bonfire decreases. And so the infections and the number of people that have gotten sick and there have been able to at least mount some kind of an antibody response will diminish the bonfire significantly. Number two, because we do have the vaccines and because we do have a significantly large number of people, thank God, not enough, but a large number of people who have been boosted or immunized with the two shots from the COVID, from the Pfizer and Moderna, or the one shot from J&J, that is making a big difference. And then finally, people, many people are following the suggestion and the guidance around social physical distancing. So it's a combination of factors. But we also, very quickly and finally, Harold, have to remember that it's not a homogeneous response because our kids are the ones that are in the hospitals now. It is our young children that are getting infected significantly and are problematic. And so we have to remember, adults, that what we do or what we have not done has led to so many of our children becoming sick. And what we cannot yet fully get our arms around is what will be the long-term consequences of this many children either being infected from this virus or having to be hospitalized from it with the secondary consequences of being in the hospital. So it isn't across the board. And let us remember, adults, we have our children depending on us to do the right thing. Mm.
Dr. Jashaun Mance, I'll have the final question and comment from you. I've been asking mostly what your clients are telling you, but what are you telling them about how best to manage their pandemic impatience as we are now in finishing up year two, heading into year three of this pandemic?
For many people, it's the feeling of not having a sense of control that really piques anxiety. And so one of the things I tell clients is to try and identify an area that you have some sense of control. So whether that's kind of given a routine of I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. or 5:30 and do mindfulness and meditation. Find some area in your life that you do have control over and focus on that area. All the other areas in your life, you are going to have to expend energy. You are going to have to manage those. But having an area in your life where you feel like you have a sense of control will essentially increase mental health and do wonders for one's mental health. And then also just kind of finding ways for self-care. And I know we use that word often, but it is finding peace in the midst of sometimes what feels like chaos. So even if that's just taking 5 minutes, a long time, just to breathe and recenter yourself.
Mm. I think that's a great way to end this conversation. Dr. Jashaun Mance, I want to thank you so much for sharing with us. Good luck tomorrow at the event.
Thank you.
And Dr. Reed Tuckson, as always, I appreciate your input.
Thank you.
And we also want to thank Shantae Daniel, principal at the Excel Academy, for participating in the conversation. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, January 24th. 2022. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.